Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Wednesday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, on the eve of the NFL draft. I know it's obnoxious. I know we talk about it nonstop. I know I've been obsessed with it for years, and I know you're over it. Tomorrow night, Friday night, I sit in front of a television, take notes, so happy. Joy Taylor is joining us. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. I was going to say, happy draft eve.
That's what it is for me. I feel like it's Christmas Eve. Draft eve, Christmas Eve. So, there's new information today. This from Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter used to work in Denver. So, if Adam Schefter ever has information on a Denver team, it's money. Or the Shanahans, it's money. Because Mike Shanahan created that dynasty in Denver. Schefter is very connected to the Shanahan family. More than any reporter in America. So this information is either true or it's out there for a reason. Leaked for a reason. The information from Schefter. As much as the Niners love Mac Jones, and they do, I believe the gap between Mac and other quarterbacks like Trey Lance has been narrowed considerably. I can tell you over the weekend, they did not know who they were going to take. Now, I believe they're going to take Mac Jones. It's not what I would do. But as I told you over the last couple of days, they're protecting their butt. Chicago drafted Mitch Trubisky, went all in, had no interest in Deshaun Watson. Now they look like idiots. Trubisky's a bust. Deshaun Watson's very good. Had Chicago gone in and said, we love them both. It's a 50-50 proposition. Leak this story. But God, Deshaun's ACL. Then the GM and the coach, if they get fired, can get another job and not look like they like Trubisky significantly over Deshaun Watson, which is insane. Just like liking Mac Jones over Justin Fields or Trey Lance to me feels insane. But if you pick Mac Jones, there's a strong likelihood that Trey Lance ends up in New England, because the story today is New England's moving up. And if Trey Lance goes to New England, sits behind Cam for a year, gets Belichick, that offensive line, and Josh McDaniels, he is going to crush. And if Mac Jones doesn't do well, and I think he would struggle some against, I don't know, the best division in football, especially early, and then Trey Lance in 2 years is rolling, you look really foolish, and you got a losing record. And the fourth best quarterback in your division behind Kyler Murray, Matt Stafford, and Russell Wilson. So I think this is a little bit of San Francisco. They like Mac Jones. They want Mac Jones. And they want to cover their butt a little bit to say down the road, hey, we love Trey Lance too, as he's starring in New England. But I want to talk. Everybody thinks the risk is taking Trey Lance. I think the risk is Mac Jones. And I'll tell you why. If you're a 49er fan, and I know we all roll our eyes because fans can be emotional. Fan is short for fanatic. But I want you to take yourself into the eyes of a San Francisco 49er fan. The draft is over. It's Monday. If I was a 49er fan Monday and we draft Trey Lance and we keep Garoppolo, I'm thinking, all right, I got the quarterback that got me to a Super Bowl. And I got a guy physically who needs some development, but he can go toe-to-toe with Mahomes, Josh Allen, as a runner, as a size, as an arm. That's a good Monday for a 49er fan. I got the now win guy. I mean, Garoppolo's 24-8 against, or 8-3 against the NFC West, but he's 24-8 as a starter. Got to a Super Bowl, won a division against Russell Wilson, against the Rams. So I'd feel great Monday morning if I was a Niner fan. I got the guy that got me to a Super Bowl. I mean, I crossed my fingers on his health. But when he's healthy, we win our games. And then I got the future, this wild, crazy, high-ceiling athlete. That's a great Monday. What I don't want Monday is we traded Garoppolo so we could draft a win-now quarterback and by week eight, he's playing, and he's not clearly anything close to Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson athletically, and has a BB gun compared to Matt Stafford as an arm. That's a bad Monday. So I don't get the win now guy or the high ceiling guy. And I think it all comes down to not Mac Jones or Trey Lance, because I would take Trey Lance. Because my belief is Kyle Shanahan's, all five of these guys would win with Shanahan. All of them. I've even said, I don't like Mac Jones. I think he'll win. You're not going to win the divisions. You're not going to win Super Bowls. You're going to win with Kyle Shanahan. He went with Matt Schaub. He wins with Kirk Cousins. He wins with everybody. He made Matt Ryan an MVP. Okay? He wins with it. All of these guys will work with him. But why would I want a low ceiling? But it doesn't come down to Mac or Trey. It comes down to Jimmy Garoppolo. The Niners, rightly so, are concerned that Garoppolo not only can't stay healthy, he gets hurt in September. And if he gets hurt again, he has no value. Nothing. You can't get anything for him. That's true. But couldn't I argue this? In a world we live in today, where even the Niners give up multiple first round picks, to draft a college quarterback where they don't know if he'll succeed. Who cares if you don't get anything out of Jimmy Garoppolo? Just think about this. You only gave up a second rounder for him, and he got you to a Super Bowl. He won you division title. If he gets hurt and Trey Lance has to play a little early, all right, wasn't meant to be. But don't be paralyzed. I thought about this driving in today. You really got everything out of Jimmy Garoppolo you could want for a second round pick. I mean, he came with an injury history, right? He came with one. You didn't know if he was going to be great. That's why you only gave up a second round pick, and that's why New England only got her a second round pick. I mean, these quarterbacks out of college now are getting three first round picks. Okay. Jimmy, you got a second. He got you to a Super Bowl. Just don't worry about it. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt, and Trey Lance plays earlier than you'd like. But do you really think Mac Jones is ready to win the NFC West over Russell Wilson, Matt Stafford, and Kyler Murray? If San Francisco just thinks about it this way, we got everything possible out of Jimmy Garoppolo. And you don't worry about getting anything in return. We didn't pay him $30 million. We didn't pay him $40 million. We gave up a second-round pick. You could get a second-round pick now for a right tackle. And he got us to a Super Bowl. So we don't care what we get out of him. Let's just keep him as long as he's upright. We're not going to sign him to another contract, but we're going to keep him as long as we can, cross our fingers on health, and let the much greater athlete with a much bigger arm and the much better body and the much higher ceiling, Trey Lance, develop. That, to me, feels low risk. I got the win Super Bowl now guy or get to the Super Bowl now guy. I got the high ceiling guy. If I'm San Francisco fan and I wake up Monday and I got lowest ceiling guy in the toughest division with three super talented quarterbacks and I don't have Garoppolo, so I'm probably not going to be great now and I'm not sure I'm going to be great later. Instead, if Garoppolo's healthy, we're really good now, can win the division, and Trey Lance has a chance to be a superstar later. Nobody thinks Mac Jones could be a superstar. He's Kirk Cousins. So I know we roll our eyes at fans, but if you're a fan Monday, I'd feel way better about keep Jimmy G, squeeze every last ounce of juice out of that orange. Like, who cares what you get for him? You only give up a second-round pick for him, and then I get the ceiling guy. But the story is interesting because it comes from Adam Schefter. He's tied to the Shanahans. What would I do? Take Trey Lance, keep Jimmy G. What are they going to do, my guess? Trade Jimmy G, fear that he gets hurt, they get nothing, and take Mac Jones. And this is just covering their butt, showing a little interest for other guys. All right, so the Herd, by the way, brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. So the Buccaneers did sign Antonio Brown eventually. Team-friendly deal. So this is noteworthy, and I'll read this to you. The Buccaneers have all 22 Super Bowl starters back. Only team in the Super Bowl era to do this. All of them back. Their top 16 snap count leaders on offense back. Their top 21 snap count leaders on defense back. All the coordinators back. Head coach back. Never been done. Unprecedented. And I don't remember the last NFL team that had this many Pro Bowl level players on it, but with no holes. Seattle's got a high-end players, but they got some holes in the secondary. The Rams, again, they got some star players, but they got some holes. The Dallas Cowboys have star players, but a lot of holes in the back end. The 49ers, by the way, great players, but holes. It is virtually, in the last 15 years, I cannot think of a roster that's got stars everywhere and essentially is just drafting for depth. They're going to probably take a quarterback and a running back, and none of those guys will play. Anybody they draft, not going to play much. This, of course, is the opposite of what Green Bay is willing to do, because Tampa Bay has an advantage. Their history is overwhelmingly briefly great or irrelevant. So Tampa Bay doesn't feel a burden to be relevant. I covered the Buccaneers. I was there. They were irrelevant when I was there. I left. They got relevant great fast. Tampa Bay's entire history is great briefly or irrelevant. There's no pressure. It's like newfound money. It's not family money where you're protecting grandpa and dad's money. Tampa Bay's never had any money. This is their 15 minutes of fame. They don't give a rip. They're going to go all in. Green Bay, meanwhile, is so terrified of the lows, they're not willing to push any money down the road to get highs now. If you go look at Favre and Aaron Rodgers, they only won Super Bowls early in their career when they weren't expensive. The minute Favre and Rodgers did not win Super Bowls is after their big contract. Because in order to win a Super Bowl, when you're paying a quarterback a lot, you got to push money way down the road. But Tampa doesn't care. Arians is going to retire in a couple years. Brady's going to retire in a couple years. The history of the franchise, the owners, we've been irrelevant for decades. We're fine. Sometimes there is an advantage to not having a great history. I've said this before. When I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, the University of Washington had a history of being very competent for about 30 years with Don James. So when he left, they played it safe. A lot of anybody connected to Don, they hired. They didn't want to take any big risks. Oregon was irrelevant my whole life. And so they would take big swings on coaches. Chip Kelly from New Hampshire, they didn't care. They had 300 uniforms. Washington once tried to change uniforms. The fans were outraged. USC deals with some of this now. Their history, they're paralyzed by it. Oregon was never paralyzed by it. They had no history. They named a stadium after a coach with a losing record. They just went for it. 300, do this, do that. You're not beholden to anybody. And so Tampa Bay's got no history. So they don't give a rip. They're going to push all the money down the road, win now, max their credit cards, take a big risk, try to win another Super Bowl. It'll be somebody else's problem in 2 years that they have no money. They're going to do what the Saints did. And by the way, why did the Saints go all in on Breeze? What is their history? Great briefly or awful? And so Saints are like, we're going all in. If we win a second Super Bowl with Breeze, we don't have to win a Super Bowl for 10 years. Stadium's packed. But Green Bay has been so competent and so capable for 30 years, they are terrified of being irrelevant like they were in the 70s and 80s, and they won't push money down the road. They could easily push Aaron's money down the road. Easily. They won't do it. They're terrified by it. Okay, we've got another story on the Denver Broncos and the quarterback situation, and I'll ask you a question. Who would you want, Garoppolo or Teddy Bridgewater? Because that's the situation Denver may be in this morning.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So a story out of Denver this morning, and we all know Denver's been very transparent about this. They want a quarterback competition. Translation, Drew Lock's not long for the organization. So the story out of Denver this morning by the NFL Network's James Palmer is they might not upgrade their quarterback position in the draft. Denver believes they have options outside of picking number 9. Translation, Teddy Bridgewater or Jimmy Garoppolo. People say they're leaning to Teddy Bridgewater. I like Teddy Bridgewater. He is a Band-Aid. Denver doesn't need a Band-Aid at quarterback. They need surgery. Jimmy Garoppolo, for all of his injury history, is one of the easiest, safest guys in the league to acquire. You bring him on for a year. If he gets hurt, There's no cap hit by year two. His contract now is very doable for the Niners or for anybody. Listen, I like Teddy Bridgewater. He's a Band-Aid. He's really hard to sell to a locker room. Hey, we're going to compete against Justin Herbert, 6'6 with a huge arm, and Patrick Mahomes, and we got Teddy Bridgewater. Garoppolo at least feels big on the marquee. He looks the face, the model, the arm, the Super Bowl. Jimmy Garoppolo in his career is 24-8. That's 75% win total. Well, it's Kyle. No, because Kyle can't win when he doesn't play. I think Garoppolo is the easy one here. I think it's very hard to sell Ryan Fitzpatrick to a locker room if you just made the playoffs. I think for Denver, in a division with Mahomes and Justin Herbert, these are other world talents. It's hard to sell Teddy Bridgewater. It's easier to sell a guy that's been to a Super Bowl. And we can say what we want about Garoppolo. In the 1 year he was healthy, he had 27 touchdown passes. That's in a run-centric offense. Teddy's never thrown for more than 15, even in Minnesota. Matt Rhule opted to go with Sam Darnold, who many perceive as a bust, over Teddy Bridgewater. Matt Rhule, quarterback guy. So if Denver is considering a quarterback, remember, two people have fallen in love with Garoppolo, Belichick and Kyle Shanahan, arguably the best or second best offensive guy, the best defensive coach, and arguably the best coach all time and the best young coach. They're all in on Garoppolo. Big arm, can move a little. He feels big. I think for certain teams in the NFL, I don't know how Washington sells Ryan Fitzpatrick to that locker room. Guys know what he's been around the league forever. I think Teddy Bridgewater's a Band-Aid. I think he's really hard to sell. Vic Fangio's in his last year in Denver if he doesn't win. You got to be able to sell that quarterback. It's not like Fangio's in year eight. He's won seven of them. The players believe in him. Denver goes 1-4. Players will bail on Fangio. They'll go their own way. He's got to win the locker room, not just games, because there's doubters as you look around that division. They have the least dynamic offense. Their defense is a mess last year. So if you're going to go down to Garoppolo and Teddy B, and I like Teddy B, he feels much more Band-Aid than surgery, and I think Denver needs the latter more right now in that locker room and on that roster. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
There's been a lot of talk about Devontae Smith's size since he reportedly weighed in at 166 pounds, but he doesn't think his weight has anything to do with his potential in the NFL. He said, "We play football. We're in a football business. We're not weightlifting. We're not bodybuilders. It's football. That's what we're here for. All the other stuff is irrelevant." He did win the Heisman last year.
He did.
117 receptions, 1,856 yards, 23 touchdowns. He had 68 receptions, over 1,200 yards, and 14 touchdowns the year before. I really actually like Devontae Smith. I guess his size is the reason by even before this, they were talking about Ja'Marr Chase and Waddle right over him. Not only is he a really great route runner and he gets separation, he's very mature. Listening to him talk after the bowl game, that's not an easy thing to do, to right be able to stand up there after a bowl game on live television. Your whole team is there. Like, he's a very impressive young man on top of that. I actually think that a team is going to get a steal with Devontae Smith. I understand he isn't the biggest player, but he's going to be an outlier, and I get that they don't want to take a high risk on that as a high pick. But if you use him correctly, he can be very effective.
Well, Michael Irvin told me the other day in a podcast, he said, you know, today it used to be that all receivers had to go over the middle. He said,
right,
but if you use him in certain ways, it's a lot of stuff. It's throws either behind the line of scrimmage or close to it. So you're not asking him to go 18 yards into the teeth of a safety who can bear down. Michael said the league's different now. You don't take the beating at wide receiver. If you use him, if you have another receiver and you can use him on underneath stuff and bubble screens and this stuff, he's so explosive, he'll be very productive. But Michael's take was, in my era, size was huge. Because
right,
Michael told me the story. Troy Aikman used to just say to him, He called it a bang route. It was called a bang eight. He'd say in the huddle, he'd say, Michael, it's a bang eight. Go up and get that ball. And Michael said that meant you're going to get smoked. So it was called a bang eight. Michael said, when Troy looked at me once, twice a game, go up and get the ball, what meant I was going to get crushed.
Right.
That route, you don't, that's not part of the NFL to that level anymore.
Exactly. I mean, Joel said this with us, Joel Klatt, when we talked about Devontae. Like, they moved him around a lot. If you just put him on the outside and expect him to go get it every time, like, that's not going to be effective. I get teams not wanting to use a high pick on him because he does feel like an outlier, but I think he's going to be very valuable wherever he ends up. So Kyle Pitts is one of the most coveted players in this year's draft. The Falcons are in prime position to get him at 4. With the three teams ahead of them taking quarterbacks. But Pitts isn't convinced that's where he'll end up. He said he believes the first 4 picks in the draft this year will be quarterbacks, which is kind of interesting because he's talking to these teams. Now, that's just his opinion, obviously. And maybe the Falcons are telling him, kind of, we're definitely going to take you, maybe, you know, but don't say that.
Well, I was thinking this morning, you know, we all kind of feel like we know the top 3 picks, despite the Adam Schefter report that the Niners are going either way. I think they've decided on Mac Jones. They're covering their butt a little, but who knows?
Right.
But I think most people have actually moved off of Atlanta taking a quarterback. I mean, almost every mock draft I look at now, even the well-connected people, is Kyle Pitts at 4. But we were talking about this in the team meeting this morning, that what if Atlanta just goes and goes out and gets Trey Lance? Man, it changes every, because I'm Cincinnati. I'm like, I already have T. Higgins. Now I'm going to give Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow, his career could be elevated by one moment tomorrow. If Atlanta goes quarterback, you have the, I mean, first of all, for young quarterbacks, tight ends are hugely important.
Yeah.
And go look at the Super Bowls last 6-7 years. Tight ends and productive tight ends are a huge component in the last 7-8 years Super Bowls. Can you imagine Joe Burrow? And by the way, Joe Burrow loves Ja'Marr Chase. But if you got a tight end...
You have to take Kyle Pitts in that
spot. They already have Joe Mixon. They have T. Higgins. Yeah. Their offensive line is not awful. It's not great, but it's not awful.
You know what I was thinking about yesterday? Because we were just not talking about Zach Wilson and the Jets at all. What if the Jets don't take Zach Wilson? Like, we've all just decided that's where he's going, and it seems like that. But, like, what if they didn't? Then what happens? That's total anarchy. Because we're just not talking about it. We're just all like, it's just like submitted that that's
also
where he's going.
I was talking to an executive yesterday on television. He said, what if Justin Fields falls? He goes, do you know what the ratings will do? He goes, what's great drama is not just the early quarterbacks, but one sitting in a green room not being picked.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, the ratings will just, because also Fields has been talked about. He played at Ohio State. He, like, Aaron Rodgers was dropping, but nobody knew Cal. Nobody knew Aaron. Everybody knows Justin Fields. If Justin Fields drops,
even Trey Lance,
the drama is going to be massive for it.
I can't wait for tomorrow night. So the Cowboys will have a lot of options at the 10th pick in the draft tomorrow. The most likely need for them would be to fill a need on defense. And Jerry Jones thinks that they'll have a good chance to get the top, or at least one of the top defensive players in this class. He really feels like the top 9 picks could all be offense, which they very easily could. According to Fox Bet, the favorite to be taken at 10th is Patrick Surtain. J.C. Horn is second, plus 225, and Rashawn Slater at plus 400. Micah Parsons actually plus 400, and Quiddy Pay at plus 650. They are at 10. So if you look at the draft order, obviously we know there's going to, we're assuming that what you just said is not going to happen, and Justin Fields isn't going to drop like right. that, so that there are going to be 5 quarterbacks taken. Then you have the offensive linemen. You have Ja'Marr Chase, Waddle, Kyle Pitts. Like, could very easily be the first defensive pick in the draft at 10.
Listen, Dallas has 10 picks. And just Dan Quinn's an upgrade defensive coordinator. If they went 8 to 9 picks like Carolina and just go all defense, Dallas could transform a side of the football. When you have the 10th pick, and I think they have multiple thirds and fourths, Dallas could get 5 starters out of this draft on defense. And remember, Dak's back. So the time of possession, last year, Dallas's time of possession was 28th in the NFL. With Dak, it'll go top 7, top 8, meaning the defense not only has a better coordinator, not only got 7 new starters, but won't be on the field and compromised as much. So Dallas could really change a side of the ball. I mean, Carolina went all defense last year. They got two stars.
Yeah.
A safety, Derek Brown, the defensive tackle. I've always said with the draft is I would almost always trade down. But I like teams that just say, listen.
Let's just fix this side of the ball.
We're just going to go to one side of the ball. Carolina did it, and their defense went from 31st to 18th. On just that.
I'd like to see them take at least one offensive lineman, Dallas.
Yeah.
But the offensive side of the ball is not where they have issues.
No.
They were rolling before Dak got injured.
Yeah. Actually, their receiving corps is probably the best in the league. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
My buddy Nick Wright, First Things First, joining me now live. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So there is a story this morning that the Patriots and the Panthers have done the groundwork for the number 8 pick. Now, you wouldn't necessarily do it this morning. You would sit and wait to see what Atlanta does. Atlanta, you know, so they're laying the groundwork. They've made calls saying, basically, if Atlanta doesn't take a quarterback, you know, we know Cincinnati's not. Your take on the Panthers moving back, the Patriots moving up, just kind of your thought on the story that developed today.
All right, so my immediate reaction to this story was I thought of you, and I almost sent you a congratulatory text that your guy Sam Darnold might actually have a chance to keep that job in Carolina. I know that makes you happy,
yeah.
And as your friend, it makes me happy for you.
Yeah.
It also, listen, I think the Patriots are going to be able to get Jimmy Garoppolo if they want him for a second-round pick. So the question they have to ask themselves is if, let's say, Justin Fields falls, would you rather have whomever you were going to draft at 15 plus Jimmy Garoppolo, or use those two assets, the 15th pick and the second round pick you were going to trade for Jimmy, for Justin Fields? I would rather have Justin Fields. I would potentially also rather have Trey Lance if he were available. And even if you, it sounds like you, Colin, have a higher regard for Garoppolo's ability than I do, but his availability is terrible. And I don't think it's a stretch to say he is right now the most injury-prone starting quarterback in the NFL.
He is.
He played even in New England when he was starting those games because the Patriots were mired in one of their many, many cheating scandals. I can't remember which one. He made it through seven quarters and got hurt. So I think, you know, casting your lot with him when he's had one fully healthy season is risky. So if Fields or Lance is there, I would make the move if I'm New England.
You know, I said this. If I was a Niner fan, and to your point, then basically San Francisco only gave up a second-round pick for Garoppolo. I mean, in the world we live in today,
that's right.
Mac Jones, you may have given up three first-rounders for a guy you don't know can play. So you only gave up a second-rounder for Garoppolo, and he's gotten you to a Super Bowl, won a division. If you wake up this morning and think, we squeezed every last ounce of juice out of that orange, and you don't worry about it, and you just keep it. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt. Who cares? To me, if I'm a Niner fan and I wake up Monday morning and I think, okay, we've got Garoppolo, who we know can win now, and I get a guy that can at least go up against physically the Mahomes, Josh Allens, and I got an athlete, I would feel great. The idea that you'd get rid of Jimmy, fear he gets hurt, and Mac is starting against Russell Wilson, Stafford, and Kyler Murray, to me as a Niner fan, is terrifying, right?
I've never understood that part of it. That I totally agree. Now, if they draft Mac Jones, it means they're trading Jimmy immediately,
That's right. I would imagine. Yeah.
If they draft Trey Lance, then maybe this is a developmental year. Because keep in mind, Mahomes, first year, didn't play. Sat behind Alex Smith. The Chiefs then traded Alex Smith, and Mahomes became immediately the league's MVP. So I've never understood the fascination with Mac Jones. If you had stayed at 12 and he fell to you there, that is so different than trading the 2022 and 2023 first round picks to move up to get him. But if you do that, then you are trading Jimmy Garoppolo maybe during the draft.
Okay. The Bucs signed Antonio Brown. I would have not done that. Your thought on why they did that?
Well, I think because he's incredibly cheap. And I think this is a good story for all the young guys who are about to be drafted. Antonio Brown had as productive of a 6-year run as any receiver not named Jerry Rice in the history of football. And then he went to Oakland and all of a sudden was smuggling a counterfeit helmet onto the practice field. And everyone's like, all right, he has lost the plot here, boys and girls. And now he's playing for slightly less guaranteed money than the best kickers get. And I don't think it's because he can't play anymore. And so I understand why New England, they believe he'll be on his best behavior because he's not needed there so they can move off of him. And because you had I will bet you every team in the league this offseason had at least part of a meeting dedicated to, do we want to go after AB? And not a single team, it would appear, decided he was worth $5 million guaranteed. That speaks to, at some point, no matter how good you are on the field, the off-the-field stuff can cost you, you know, any ability to make real money in this league and play on anything except one-year contracts.
Okay, so Dr. J, who I grew up with, probably one of the first athletes in the NBA that I – he came from the ABA. Everybody fell in love with him. He had a shoe deal with Converse, and he had – just Dr. J was easy to fall in love with.
Unbelievable. The fro.
Everything.
It was just great.
His highlights, by the way, 40 years later, his highlights hold up. They're insane.
Yep.
But now he's blaming LeBron. LeBron is to blame for the super teams. Oh, it's just LeBron's fault. And I thought, oh boy, what's Nick going to say about this? So what are you going to say here?
All right, so listen, everyone belly up to their television because a quick little history lesson on the NBA. On today, today is actually the 55th anniversary of the Boston Celtics winning their eighth consecutive title of the 1960s. So methinks the 1960s had a super team because the team peeled off eight in a row. What about the 70s? Well, Oscar Robertson, one of the greatest players ever, he ends up joining up with Lew Alcindor, soon to be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, to form arguably the greatest team ever. The very next year, Elgin Baylor, who'd never won a ring, Jerry West, who'd been to eight finals but never won a ring, and Wilt Chamberlain, who had somehow only won one ring, they all get together to form the 72 Lakers. Elgin gets hurt, doesn't matter, super-duper team. They win, I think, 33 in a row, and they win the title. Then the league's a little watered down because the ABA and NBA are competing for talent. In the ABA, Dr. J is annihilating it. The ABA folds. Dr. J instantly gets to an NBA Finals, scores 40 points in an elimination game of those finals, but his team isn't good enough. That's 1977. 1980, he gets back to the NBA Finals only to face the Los Angeles Lakers. They've got Kareem, they've got a guy named Jamal Wilkes, and a rookie named Magic Johnson. And nothing Dr. J does can be good enough, so he loses. The very next year, Dr. J is the best he's been in the NBA. He wins a league MVP. He gets to a Game 7 of the conference finals. They're playing a Boston Celtics team that has Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, Cedric Maxwell, Tiny Nate Archibald, who is still good, and a rookie named Kevin McHale. Shockingly, the Sixers can't win that series. Goes to a Game 7. They lose by one. Not Dr. J's fault. The next year, Dr. J's still trying to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm the defending league MVP. Gets back to the finals, and who's there? Those damn Lakers again. So what happens? The 1981 MVP, Dr. J, and the 1982 MVP, Moses Malone, they team up together on the 1983 Sixers. And what happens? They form one of the greatest teams ever, who almost sweeps the entire NBA playoffs and wins the title to dethrone the previous super team Lakers and the soon-to-be super team Celtics that only predated the super teams of the Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, Bulls, all of it. It's super team after super team after super team, starting 55 years ago today to now. So we want to put that on LeBron because he orchestrated his team instead of having smoke-filled room general managers orchestrate it. That's fine. But the history is not on my guy Dr. J's side.
No, I laugh about this. It used to be like eight teams, and Boston had the best GM and the most money, and they got all the players. The players now just coordinate it more than the general managers coordinate it, and fans don't like that. Fans don't like when the players coordinate the super team. We're always okay with the GMs and the coaches coordinating it, and agents. That's fine.
Of course. And it's always been there.
Yeah.
The whole NBA history is awesome, awesome players coming together and winning a bunch of titles.
Yep.
That's the NBA's history.
Yep. Nick Wright, good seeing you, buddy.
You as well. Talk to you later.
All right, Nick Wright. He's right on that, by the way. Of course he's right. Everybody knows, you know. By the way,
LeBron, this is my second
all the time. LeBron is very polarizing. He just is.
Right.
He has that natural ability. It's what part of what makes him a superstar. But that decision really, for whatever reason, truly bothered people. It really did.
But the idea, the league players, Charles Barkley complains about it all the time. I'm like, bro, I didn't get amnesia. You went to
Houston
to play with Hakeem and Scottie Pippen. And by the way, it's not that then Charles went to Phoenix, by the way, Kevin Johnson, Dan Marley, they had good players there too. Never in the NBA history have great players wanted to play on crappy teams.
You also get no credit for choosing the struggle.
What do you mean?
Nobody cares. Like nobody cares. Nobody's going to look back on your career. They're going to be like, yeah, you didn't win a championship. They're not going to be like, well, I chose to be loyal and stay, not move around, not play with anybody. They're just like, you just didn't win a championship.
By the way, Boston, KG, and Ray Allen joined Paul Pierce. Why doesn't that bother us? Why? Because it was brief, short, got out of the way, and your team could win.
What about Brooklyn after that?
Yeah, it's crazy. All these old guys think we got amnesia and don't remember what they did. It'd be like parents who were hippies, and then all of a sudden they have kids, and the parents were like, you shouldn't smoke pot.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I'm like, I didn't get amnesia. You smoked pot in the living room my whole life as a kid. Like, you didn't get amnesia as a kid with your hippie parents. Like, everybody remembers stars getting together.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Nobody would dispute. I'm not a big believer in luck. I think you make most of your own luck in life. But, you know, in professional sports, you can get breaks or get really bad breaks. I mean, like, I like Patrick Mahomes, but good God, he got Andy Reid, great stable ownership, Brett Veach, a roster full of amazing talent. And then he got Alex Smith, who's one of the nicest guys in the league, to mentor him for a year. That's a good series of breaks. Lamar Jackson dropped in the draft, yet to well-run Baltimore. Like, there are times where, and I'm not saying Lamar and Patrick wouldn't succeed, but Patrick Mahomes is not in back-to-back Super Bowls if he got drafted by Jacksonville or the Jets. He's just not. Sam Darnold, most reasonable people would admit, Sam Darnold got no breaks for 4 years. This Carolina move, he's starting to get break after break. First of all, there's a story today. The Patriots and the Panthers are talking. Panthers going to get multiple good picks. New England's going to move up. So Sam Darnold goes from a division with three great defensive coaches, Sean McDermott, Brian Flores, Belichick. No breaks in division. Best schemes in the league. Now he goes to a division with three offensive coaches, Arians, Arthur Smith, Sean Payton. That's a break. He goes from no running game to Christian McCaffrey. He goes from weird disengaged ownership in New York to hyper-focused, second wealthiest guy in the league, will spend whatever it takes to win, David Tepper. He goes from a bizarre coaching staff in New York where Adam Gase and Greg Williams did not get along to these young, progressive, innovative guys, Joe Brady and Matt Rhule. He goes from this intense media market to a sleepy, barely paying attention media market. He is now not only going to get potentially multiple additional draft picks to play, there's another story today that Denver wants Teddy Bridgewater. That's going to get you a second round pick. So I'm not saying Sam Darnold he can be very reckless, didn't create some of his issues, but he didn't get a break for 3 years. You talk about everything in Carolina. If they make a deal with Bridgewater and New England, that is minimum three excellent additional picks to an organization that went all defense last year and hit two home runs on the defensive side. So you need breaks in life. It can't just be a series of obstacles. Roger Staubach was great. He did get Tom Landry and the best brand in football. Troy Aikman was great. He did get Jimmy Johnson. Dan Fouts was great. He did get Don Coryell. Darnold's finally, at least, the playing field appears to be fair going forward. And if Bridgewater goes to Denver and New England makes a deal, he's going to have as many picks as the Jets had. This is a nice set of circumstances for Sam Darnold. Greg Cosell, top of the next hour.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.